Thank you so much for tuning in to Let's Talk, the official podcast of the National Runaway Safe Line, or NRS. At NRS, we operate the federally designated national communication system for youth who have run away, are experiencing homelessness, or who may be considering leaving home. For over 50 years, we've provided crisis support and resources for young people, families, and communities across the nation. My name is Christopher, and honestly, I'm really excited to continue season 5 of Let's Talk, because this season is all about giving young people with lived experience a space to share their stories and highlight the challenges they faced. Hopefully, through these conversations, you'll learn ways to better serve and support young people who have experienced or are experiencing a crisis. Last week, I talked to Jillian Yearns, a youth advocate from Georgia, about making the impossible decision to leave home at 16 in order to protect herself and her child, and working to stay positive through it all. This week, I'm joined by Shardae Hamilton, a youth advocate from here in Chicago. Shardae, whenever you're ready, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Shardae Hamilton. I'm from Chicago, Illinois. I am the youth fellow for the National Runaway Safe Line, and I also serve on the Night Ministry Board and the National Network for Youth Board.
Wow, so right off the bat, you have three jobs, all based in activism and advocacy. Can you tell me what draws you to this work?
This is something that I am passionate about. I have lived experience. I was afraid to speak up and speak out before. So this is my chance to let other people know that it's okay.
And when you talk about sharing your experience, you're talking about your experiences with homelessness or with the foster care system. Can you specify?
Yes, I have had experiences with both. I was in the foster care system for about 9-10 years. Then my mother, she was older. She ended up adopting me. But due to her being older and DCFS not being really involved in my life, I ran out of services when she passed away. I was a young mother. When I had my baby in 2014, I ended up being homeless. I stayed in my mother's abandoned home. I didn't know that I was considered a squatter until I learned about my rights after being homeless for almost 2 years. I stayed in her house about a year before DCFS came and removed my daughter from my custody. Yeah.
How old were you when you first went into foster care yourself?
2.
And just so people don't generalize the foster care experience, can you share a little bit about your experience and your relationship with your mother?
It was okay. Like I said, my mother was older. I wasn't a foster care that went from house to house to house. So I did only have one caregiver that ended up adopting me. She was a very different disciplinarian, but it was an okay experience.
Can you give context on the disciplinary styles as much as you're comfortable? Like, how is it different from your own approach to discipline?
Yeah, so I wouldn't discipline my own child the way my mother used to discipline me. I used to get beat. I used to get tied to different things. I used to get left in the basement for days without food and water. I guess this is how she was disciplined as a child. My mom was like 67. When she adopted me and my little brother. So she was from back in the day, but it was hard, but she loved us, and I'm here. I'm still here today.
How has that shaped your own views of motherhood? Like, obviously you mentioned already that you reflect on that and you say, that's not how I'm going to discipline my child, or that's not how I'm going to build relationships with my child. What else from that experience helps inform who you are as a mother today?
Yeah, I think that experience have made me into a soft parent. A lot of things that my kids do, I'm not okay with, but I don't discipline them. Like, I don't believe in it. We have conversations. I talk to them because I know how much pain that had caused me. And I would never want my kids to live that experience. But yeah, it definitely, it made me, my mindset a little different on parents and the way they discipline kids. I am not a believer of whoopings, as they call them. I do timeout and things like that. But as far as whooping, patting, and anything that's causing the child pain, I'm not for.
Did being pregnant change your relationship with your mother at all, or how you were being treated at home?
When I found out I was pregnant, my mom passed away September of 2014, and I had my daughter December 20th of 2014, so she wasn't aware of my pregnancy. I had found out late about being pregnant with my daughter, and she was already sickly, so no.
Wow. I mean, I'm kind of at a loss knowing what my mindset was at that age. I don't even know where I would begin, like, to... I mean, what did you do for help at the time?
Yeah, I had no help, no resources. The only place I knew to stay was at my mother's abandoned home. So I had my daughter in 2014 in December at Holy Cross Hospital. I was talking to this guy at the time, and I ended up staying at his house. But due to him not being the father of the child, we had a couple of disagreements and stuff, and I had to leave his place of residency. So the only place I knew to go back to was my childhood home, which my mother passed away at and was left open. So I was there with my daughter from when she was 6 months all the way until DCFS came. No, she was younger than 6 months. She was like... Three months. Yeah, she was 3 months all the way up until she was 8 months when DCFS came and removed her from my care.
Were you able to work at the time?
Nope. I was receiving benefits from the state.
I mean, that's so much to process. Aside even from needing to take care of yourself, you also have a newborn who needs special care. Were you able to go to any doctor's appointments with your child?
It was really hard even receiving benefits for the state because I didn't have a stable address. The WIC that I was getting, I had to sell some of it to get like money to buy diapers and stuff. So that was my little hustle, but she did have milk. We didn't have any doctor's appointments. We didn't go to any doctor's appointments. Another reason why DCFS was involved.
You mentioned earlier that the house was abandoned. Did you have electricity? Did you have running water? What was available to you at the house?
Okay, so when I went back to the house, the electricity was still on. The water, we had this, we called him a little street dude that came out and turned the water on for us. But when DCFS had came out, all of that was disconnected. They put a abandoned note on my door where I had to leave.
And to my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, but DCFS doesn't just randomly decide that they're going to visit you. Do you know how they learned about your situation in particular?
Yeah, so once my water got cut off, I was going over to my neighbor's house to bathe my child and bathe myself also. And it was so consistently that they got worried about how am I living in this house without no water? What am I doing? How am I giving water to this baby? Why am I coming over here filling up bottles of water for her and taking it across the street? So they ended up calling DCFS on me.
Had you had any conversations with them about this? Did they try to help at all?
No, they was acting like they was all for me. They was acting like that they was here to help, that if I needed anything to call them or come across the street, knock on the door. So that's why I was so open. Like, oh, they nice because they watched me grow up. This my childhood neighborhood. But they ended up stabbing me in my back.
You know, this isn't my first time hearing that at some point for a young person who is having a similar experience, there is an adult that will betray their trust and make it really hard for them to trust other adults going forward. I mean, in this case, your child was taken from your care, which is extremely traumatizing. What's your relationship with your daughter like now?
We were separated still to this day, to be honest. I see her, but she's adopted in another family. I was pregnant with my son. I have full custody of my son. But my daughter ended up getting adopted into another family. We see each other. She knows I'm her mom and things like that. But I never got the chance to gain guardianship over her again.
Well, it's really a relief, and it's so amazing that you guys are able to maintain a relationship through all of this, and even more impressive that you're able to have open communication about the situation. What do you guys do now when you spend time together?
So we was just together. She went home yesterday. We had an amazing time. I have an open relationship with the parents that she's with now. So she knows I'm her mother. She came out of me. I carried her. We have a conversation about what happened, why she don't live with me and her brother. But it's nothing but love. She loves me so much. She tells me all the time.
I'm so thankful that's the case. And honestly, I feel like I jumped a little ahead earlier because I was so shocked at how DCFS came to be involved in the first place. I want to go back to that. Like, what were your thoughts when that was happening?
At first, I knew it was going to happen because just me staying in the house with no water and stuff. But it was hurtful that when I found out who did it. So when DCFS came out, it was late one day. I just had got done bathing my baby. I had came across the street. She was eating. DCFS was called on. They came in, let me know that I wasn't able to stay at the house and that they had to remove her from her care. And did I have any family that she could go to? And I was like, no, I don't have nobody. It's just me. So they let me know that she has to go into foster care until I'm able to find housing and things like that. So I went to my court dates. I did everything that I'm supposed to do. I was supposed to do parenting classes. I did that. So find out that she would never be returned to my care.
Okay. What were the original options that they gave to you?
That I needed to find immediate housing. So I found housing because I was pregnant at the time with my son. So I ended up going to a TLP. A TLP is a teen living program. And at the time it was called, it was on 55th in Indiana. I forgot the name of the program, but they referred me to different shelters. But since I didn't have nowhere to go during the day, I needed a shelter that I was able to stay at. So I was referred to the night ministry, and due to me being pregnant with my son at the time, I had went to the night ministry. But I was so shaken up about the situation. I was scared to speak to anybody. I didn't trust no adult. I didn't want nobody talking to me. But that was like limiting me from getting resources because if I'm not saying what I need, how can people help me? So I went to the night ministry and the caseworker was just being real with me. She was like, girl, how am I supposed to help you get your daughter back and help you get housing if you're not talking to me, if I don't know what's wrong with you, if you're not telling me your story? And it just a light bulb just clicked on, like, you're right. Like, how am I supposed to get help if I can't get help, if I can't ask for help? But I'm scared to help for ask for help because y'all judging me. Y'all judging me because I'm a young mother. Y'all judging me because I got a daughter that just got taken into DCF custody and I'm pregnant with my son. Y'all judging me because I don't have no family. So it was just a lot. But I ended up opening up and I'm talking to her and that's how I am where I am today.
So it sounds like through all of the judgment and people going behind your back, what helped you bring your walls down after that was somebody just being straightforward with you, being real.
Yeah, and that it she was kind of relatable. She said she was from the same area I was from. She said that she has been through some things in life. She was more relatable. She brought me down to her level. Well, she came down to my level. She did. It's not like she felt sympathy for me, but she let me know that she's here for me.
Was there anything in particular that you remember her saying to you that made a light bulb go off in your head, or I guess made you feel confident or comfortable enough to ask for help?
Yeah, she was just pretty much like, if you need help, how am I supposed to help you? Like, she like, I'm here to help you. Like, we're letting you stay here. Like, we get these services, but we can't give you these services if we're not open for them. So,
And how long were you at the TLP with the Night Ministries?
So the night ministry is not a TLP. I had left the TLP to go to the night ministry. The night ministry was a pregnant and parenting shelter I stayed at. And I ended up staying there for 9 months. I went there in January and I stayed there from January all the way to November. That's when I got my own apartment.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying. So how much time did you spend at the actual TLP?
Just a day. So the TLP was the drop-in center. It was just, yeah, somewhere you could just go in, get resources, something to eat, drink, and you go out the door.
So what was it like being in the program with the Night Ministries for 9 months?
At the time, I was trying to get my daughter back, so we was going to court dates. At the time, I was pregnant with my son all the way up to July, so I was doing like little programs inside the night ministry. I did have a little job. I was a security officer at McCormick Place. But that was pretty much it. They was pretty much focused on getting my daughter back.
Did the Night Ministries offer you any educational opportunities to learn more?
Yeah, I took mental health classes. Yeah, they had a couple of other resources that was available for me, but I couldn't get them unless I spoke up and said what I needed.
What were some of the other challenges that you faced? Like what barriers did you run into throughout this experience? Like I know for some young people who are in similar situations, legal documentation can be a real challenge.
So when I went to the night ministry, I had nothing, because like I said, my mom had passed away. Her house was abandoned, the basement flooded, so I had nothing, and that was one of the barriers that was an issue for me receiving a lot of help for my child, because I didn't have no ID. I got arrested one time for not being able to prove who I was without having an ID. I had to sit in a holding cell. Yeah, so the night ministry ended up helping me receive my birth certificate, my social security card, and they paid for me to go get my ID.
Okay, that's amazing. It sounds like the Night Ministries was really able to do a lot for you and advocate for you in a lot of different ways. When you reflect back on all of these things that happened to you during this period of time, is there anything that you think that you would do differently?
I wish that I would have used my voice before it would have got as bad as it was. I wish I would use my voice as soon as I got put out from the dual house instead of me going back to my mother's abandoned home. I wish that's when it should have kicked in. Like, okay, now I need help. Where do I go? How do I get there? So I wish using my voice, that's like the only issue I feel like was a setback for me being scared to speak up and speak out.
No young person should ever have to go through what you went through. I was raised hearing, oh, it takes a village. So I would hope that someone in your community would have stepped in to help without you even needing to ask, in a perfect world. Just knowing that your mom had passed, you think that there would be someone in the community taking note and stepping in to help you if they could. And I really hope that you don't hold any internal resentment for all that you went through, because it's a lot. Was there anything that you wish the adults in your life had done differently?
Just let me know the different resources in the neighborhood, or just let me know like it's gonna be okay instead of just talking down on me. You a mother already? Yeah, your daughter already in DCFS custody. Why would you get pregnant with your son? They gonna take your son. How are you living in a house with no water? Why don't you have family? Like stuff like that.
Oh, okay. So people presented questions to you that were really judgmental, like ways for them to pass judgment. I understand. How did you protect your mental health through all of this?
I really never really have mental health issues or things to like trigger anxiety. Like, I don't even know what that is, to be honest with you. I'm just a happy, outgoing person. That's just me. I think that's how I get through things. I laugh. Like, my mom used to tell me, 'cause when stuff's not even funny, it'd be funny to me. Like, 'cause she said that's how I cope. That's just a coping mechanism for me. So, I'm just a happy person. Like, it's just, that's just who I am. That's just my personality. I never had no down days. Like, I cried for when they took my daughter and stuff like that. But it wasn't like where I was suicidal or anything like that. I believe in God. I feel like He's a higher power. He's over me. He knows my heart. And He's gonna get me through everything. So, I guess that could answer your question. Me and God, like this, we buddies.
So it's great you have always have somebody to look up to.
Yeah, I call myself his favorite child. I know it's others that's his favorite, but in my eyes, I'm his favorite.
I love that you're so positive and have such positive energy. But what do you think it is that enables that positivity?
I'm definitely thankful that's not my experience no more. I'm thankful that I have been housed for 7 years without no incidents and accidents. Thankful that my son has been in my care for 7 years, no problems, no DCFS involvement. He is prospering and he is awesome. I'm thankful that my daughter has went to a great family that allows me to talk to her, see her whenever I want. She knows her my mommy. I will always love her. I'm just thankful for every day that I wake up, that I'm able to tell my story, others to hear my stories, and let them know that there's hope out here. And don't give up. And if you need me to speak up and speak out for you, that's what I'm here for. That I am an advocate for the youth.
I love that. I love that. I love that. What's life like today?
Life is beautiful. Life be life for now. It be having its ups and downs, but I gotta keep pushing because I'm not just living for me no more. I have two kids, beautiful kids that I'm living for. My son, his hearing is low, so his speech is delayed. So his main communication is sign. So I'm currently learning sign language with him. So that's, yeah.
And if there was one thing that a young person or someone supporting a young person should take away from our conversation today, what do you think that is?
Definitely don't give up. Sometimes we got to start from the bottom. We have to go through our little stages. Homelessness might be one. Foster care might be another. But it is light at the end of the tunnel. Just keep pushing. Keep believing. Believe in what you believe in. But just keep going.
Sharday, thank you so much for sharing your story and for being vulnerable with us. The work that you're doing, it will change lives, and I am so proud to have you as a member of our Youth Advisory Board. And I want to thank you also, listener, for listening. You can learn more about the National Runaway Safe Line Youth Advisory Board by visiting 1-800-RUNAWAY.org/YAB, like Youth Advisory Board. Transcripts for the Let's Talk podcast are available at 1-800-RUNAWAY.org/transcripts. Stay tuned for more of these touching stories directly from young people with lived experience on the Let's Talk podcast.